those are happy times for most grown-ups, and they try to maintain them in some way, even though we're old people now. I remember seeing my grandmother play Steal the Bacon when she was real old. When I asked her her age, she was like 78. And that seemed real old to me. And now it seems young. We grow old fast. And we hope that you'll keep remembering the time of your childhood and try and bring some little particles of happiness with you as you go through your life day to day. I see it in, like, AMB and ANS. They tease each other, the old ones. They still remember how it was, but they don't do it so much. We're going to have to regain that spirit somehow. And I know all of the old people there love the little children. And most of the children love them back. But some are real shy. And they don't know how to approach the older people. And I think that's something we, as old AMB and ANS, can try to bring back. There's a sense of fun. Even at meetings we had, while they're waiting for people to come and start, we would tease each other and play games that you can do in just a few minutes.
I guess maybe if we could move a little past childhood, it sounds like you had a really wonderful childhood here in Wrangell, but when did you leave Wrangell, and what did you do when you left?
I left Wrangell. I was anxious to see other parts of Alaska. So it wasn't a happy time for me. I was excited and looked forward to going to Seattle. But we just stayed there as long as the boat was there, and then it went down to Portland. And this was a whole new country to me. I'd never even been to, well, I'd been to Petersburg and Ketchikan, but I'd never been as far as Sitka or Juneau. So the whole trip was really exciting to me. The people were different. In some ways, they weren't as friendly. In Wrangell, we'd wave at anybody that went by in a car, even if we didn't know them. It was just a greeting. And we felt comfortable going to other people's homes, and they would give us peanut butter and bread if we were hungry. It was like being a part of a big family. So anyway, after I graduated, there were 10 boys in my class and only one girl, and I was the only girl. We graduated, and I was valedictorian, and I was scared to death to have to speak to all the people there. And I wrote out a speech, and I tried to imitate grown people that talk so big. And then my nose started to run right when I was in front of everybody. I didn't know whether to just go like this or say excuse me and grab a Kleenex and wipe your face. There were 12 kids in my class when we graduated, and that was really a good time, but it was kind of scary. I'd never been to Seattle or any place. So we went to Seattle on a steamboat called the Princess Louise, and it was a beautiful ship, and they had a Santa Claus on there, and they gave us little pieces of holly to put on our coats. And we had a lot of fun traveling on that boat because we had, there were a lot of kids that were traveling alone. Their parents couldn't afford to go with them. So they had somebody that would look after us and take us to breakfast and things like that. And we liked them. They were fun. When we got to Seattle, and wanted to go to Ivor's Acres of Clams. But I kept hearing about it over the radio, and it sounded real good. So I told the lady that was watching us, and she arranged for us to go there. And I had a bowl of the Ivor's Acres of Clams. It was a soup that was real tasty. And I was really proud of the fact that I went there and had soup there. We went to Sears. We were there about 3 days. My friend Hanky had an aunt, Rachel, who took us to her house, and she had a beautiful home. Everything was so new to me. When we left to go to Portland, I was by a window, and we passed a truck. And the back of the truck, which was flat, was filled up with melon, watermelon, and it had 25 cents apiece for them. And we both just couldn't believe it because we paid that much for a slice of watermelon in Marengo. And we wished we could have gotten off of the car and got some. But we went straight to Portland. And the school that I went to was called the Good Samaritan School of Nursing. And they had a building just for the students. And it was just magic time for me. There was so much to learn. But I felt good. I felt I was doing something that God wanted me to do. We were really strict in our church, which I'm thankful for. So I was happy while I was there. But we would go to class in the morning. In the afternoons, we did the work of a nurse. We were assigned certain things. So we would learn. And somehow to the exchange of caring for each other, I caught the tuberculosis, pulmonary tuberculosis, which is of the lung. Nowadays, I've read about it. You just have to take some pills once a week. I had to stay in the hospital for a year and a half in bed. That really made me kind of angry because I had been looking forward to that for so long. And I thought God was mean. But I found out that I learned so many people, some of that I still keep in touch with. So when I got out of school, I forgot to tell you I had a boyfriend. He was from Juneau, and he was good-looking in my eyes. And we were going to get married when I got out of school, which would be 3 years. And he was in the Navy for 3 years. So we would both get out at the same time. But God had other plans. 3 years came and went, and he came home. And I was still in the hospital in Tacoma. So it was really awkward because we couldn't see each other. But he would come up and I would open the window in the room I was in and lean out the window and he'd be down below at 2 floors. And we'd talk about getting married, and what happened is he fell in love with another girl while he was waiting for me to get out of the hospital. And that was a heartbreak for me. I just felt so bad, real bad. And that's one thing you might encounter in your own life. You've got to take the people, the boys that you know, let them be free in a way. But if you really care, you act a different way. You start thinking of what that person wants or what he likes. And if it's real, you both like the same things. You'll both be happy in each other's company. But if you don't care for him and you're trying to, don't do it because you just waste time. But you'll know it when you find the right one. Your heart just goes, you can feel it beating so happily. And I hope that each one of you has that experience. My grandma and grandpa were married 62 years, and I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be with one person for 60 years. But I guess when you really care about somebody, my grandma and grandpa were real good to each other. Not because they wanted to be, they just were. And that's one of the things, too, that happened. You feel good about doing something for your husband. And the hard times come. What they call the hard times is when you're old as me. I'm 83 years old. When I was in high school, and they told me our teacher, our Sunday school teacher, was that old, I couldn't believe it. 50 was ancient to me. I miss those days of being free, but I realize there's some good things we can do yet, and you'll feel better. So I'm happy. I was happy when Sage called because I love children, and I'm happiest when I'm around them. And she set this up for me and for you. And so I'm grateful to her. And I learned how to say Gunastish, which means thank you and click it. It doesn't make any difference how you say it when it comes from your heart. You really want to tell them something that you care about them. You can just say thank you, because that holds a lot of meaning, and you feel better too. I've been here a year and a half in Queen Anne, and I had a really hard time adjusting because I miss walking. I can't walk, but I flag people down. But now that we have that virus, we can't be outdoors a lot. So you really have to search yourself for things to be thankful for. And that's what I do when I get tired of trying to find something to do, because we can't do things that we used to, but we have the memories of when we could. And I treasure those memories and think about them. If not every day, days that are quiet. I've gotten the biggest kick out of watching the ravens. Ravens are funny birds. In the morning, they all head this way. I guess this is south. And they look like they're happy. They go in big bunches, like as many as 15 or 20 flying this way. And I wonder, do ravens talk to each other? I know they used to, because when I was small, they would go out to Old Town. We had a garden out there. And my grandfather used to talk to the ravens, and they would stay in the tree, and it sounded like they were talking to him, but he enjoyed it. And I think that's one thing. I know that our Tlingit people used to do it, and I hope the white people will learn is talking to or listening to ravens. When my uncle was in town, he just stopped and listened and replied. Now, some people will tell you that's not true, but God created the whole earth, and he didn't mean for us to be yelling at each other and fighting.
That's such an important sentiment, and from what I can tell, you've devoted a lot of your life to the pursuit of healing and lifting others up. I'd love to talk about healthcare. I know you went to nursing school and played a very instrumental role in starting Search, but where did you get your interest in healing?
For some reason, because the way my grandma would always put a band-aid on me or wrap a bandage around me, I kept thinking about it, and my grandpa used medicine too. When I would go out fishing with my grandpa on his boat, we'd stop at camps that older people would use to anchor and to get out of the wind where it's really blowing hard. And he would use some plants for a cough or clearing his throat, I guess you'd call it. And I became interested in plants, but I didn't know anything about them. And I tried some of them, but it didn't work. So when I went to school, I wanted to teach our health aides what plants were, healing plants. And there were some old people that had an interest in it too, that told me which ones to use. The Devil's Club, I don't know if you know about it, but that's a magic plant to our people. They would wear gloves when you cut them. When you cut them in the springtime, they should be coming out now. You cut it and you peeled it and you dried it. You could dry it or you can use it in fish. And you pour hot water over the plant that you put in a teapot and you let it simmer where it's on the stove and it bubbles a little bit until it turned a light brown, a brownish red, and then it was ready to drink. You just poured it in a cup, and I like to put honey in it, but you don't have to. It still tastes good. And it wasn't a problem to drink it when you had a cold because it tasted so good. And I tried to learn about other plants when I was in Hawaii. And I was invited down there to tell them about our program here. But when we learned about the Devil's Club, I wanted to learn about other plants. And so I went to a lady in Durango, Ray Willard's mother. She knew about plants. And I asked her to show us what else we could use. And she said, if I start showing people how to do it, they'll put it on sale. And it's not to be sold, it's to be shared. She was going by the old blanket way of doing things. So she would share what she knew. She showed me the plants. And some of them grew at the foot of a large tree. The thing is, I never learned the names of the trees or the plants because she didn't speak English. Anyway, I learned some of the plants and was really excited about it. But I couldn't get the cooperation of people that knew that would tell me about all of the plants. One of them said, if you have a people that live close to a ring of plants and you ask, and they seem to know if you're going to take the thought she has and carry it forward, or that your generation knows about the plants we can use. I couldn't get from her the names of the plants. And so I see that language being lost. There's nobody to teach it to. Nobody's interested. I had some of the plants in our health aid program, and they were just left after the sale was over. And I'm getting so old now, I can't get out and urge people to buy them. Another thing I'm really happy with, kids of your generation, some of them are learning our language. My son named Michael was teaching school in Juneau, and he would tell them some of the stories as he taught them about the country around. A lot of these landmarks on the way to Petersburg, on the way to Juneau. Like in Wrangell, there's a big rock out by where they have the hotel that Mrs. Willis used to manage across the street. And there's I keep thinking it's by the cemetery, but it's past the cemetery. There's trees full of devil's club and sting nettles. Those are used too.
How did you work your way around to getting involved with the formation of SEARCH?
Back in 1969 was when I first started getting involved. It originated with the ANB. People forget that now. It was the Native people that remembered. And I was a member of the ANS at that time. And the question came up about what did they do when people got sick or hurt. And we had a health committee. And the ANB appointed the health committee to look into how we could improve the health of our Native people. So I was one of the people appointed to look into it. So we started investigating how the Indian Health Service provided some money for treatment of illness. And it wasn't enough to do much. We didn't have clinics in the villages. We didn't have health nurses. We were very neglected. And our initial work was working with the health aides who were appointed by the ANB. Now, that might not be the true case, but as I remember, it was the ANB, because I remember my grandfather telling me, you should go. They're doing some planning right now, but you have the time. Actually, I didn't, but I had so much respect for my grandfather that I'd do anything to please him. And he was the same way. He never spanked me or got angry with me when I did some foolish things that kids do. And he encouraged me to join the health committee. So I did. And through that committee, I learned that the Indian Health Service had some monies that's appropriated to the legislature. They have to act and say, I support Wrangell for a health grant of $600 or whatever amount. So it was the ANB who actually started the health savings. And we were really surprised at the money, because nobody in Wrangell afforded how it was spent. And it seemed to us there were some things that were better afforded than just let go. So we began going house to house. I remember I was appointed to that committee, and I was out at the Eon's house. I was working into town, and I asked them how they got their health care. Well, Dr. Clemens, he was a doctor here in town, and he took care of many of the Native people. I think he was supported by the Indian Health Service, so I was too young to question it. Anyway, we got it started, and that's when Dr. Walter, maybe I'll think of his name later, he was a doctor here in town, and he was well known. And he got the health aides trained. They could deliver babies. They could set goals. But they had a long training period, the first one, something like 6 weeks. And they have a training every year for them. I don't know if they still keep that up, because they're now certified nurses, I guess it's called. So we had health aides in the villages and they were trained to take care of a lot of the illnesses that were going around. And then the land claims became enforced, and money came in for villages in town, in all the villages that were certified. It was very political, and I wasn't involved in that. I was involved in search. We heard about the money that was available for some services, and they had an act that allowed the money to flow free on a basis of a, you had to write a story of need. And I was in Washington, D.C. when we went down to stay on need for dollars for the health aides, and they granted us an amount of money that would not do the job we wanted. So we developed a plan of construction of a clinic, and we went down and implored them for some additional money. Anyway, the story of how we got money was kind of a sad story, but we did get some money and we were able to start a clinic that used to be in the old Belvison's house past the bridge, just a plain ordinary house, but it was available at the cost we could pay. So that's where we were for about a year, and we sent in another proposal. We got a little more money. At that time, the search was on its own. They didn't have any support from any town. But it was our own fault. We didn't let them know what we were doing. So we began spreading the word. We would use what money we had to travel to Petersburg or to Ketchikan to tell them what we were doing. And the money gradually matched the growth of the clinic. The clinic we have now is the result of a lot of work, a lot of compromises, a lot of effort by many people. I'm quite proud of that clinic. The one thing I'm worried about is that they're becoming, I don't know if you'd call it political, but we're on a different plane now. Like when patients came to our clinic, I told our employees, whenever someone comes through that door, you treat them like you would your aunt or your uncle or your grandma, because we're all related in some way. If you go back far enough, I have relatives in Cape and some in Juneau, and I try to remember that. But it all comes back to being able to work with people and not wanting to get the glory on your own. I mean, it's okay to be acknowledged and everything, but it shouldn't go to your head like, I want to go to that convention so I can show them how good I am at. But that's not the heart of search. I hope it's still. And I'm real proud of the people that work there, the old-timers especially. It's taken my whole life.
Thank you so much, Ethel.
You're very welcome.
I've really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Me too.
Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special episode of Talk on the Rock with the Alaska Native Sisterhood's Grand President Emeritus Ethel Lund. Ethel was also a founding member of SEARCH and of the Sea Alaska Corporation. Many thanks to ANS Grand President Paulette Moreno and Sky Workman at the Sitka Pioneers Home for their help with this interview. You can find the audio on KSTK.org under the Talk on the Rock section.